Good morning. We'd like to welcome you to our session on We Care, from gestational diabetes to cancer screening. This morning we have four wonderful speakers, so we're going to go ahead and get started so that we can end on time and not hold you guys after lunch. I'm Geraldine Perry, and I am a team lead, lead health scientist at CDC, and I lead the chronic disease epi assignees to the states. And my co-moderator is...
My name is Pratik Pandya. I'm an advanced epidemiologist for the Bureau of Health Promotion, Cancer Department of Health and Environment. My main focus is behavioral risk factor surveillance system and its analysis. I'm also a research instructor at University of Kansas for Medical Center. So I welcome you all to this wonderful session. Thank you.
Okay, our first presentation is gestational diabetes experiences demonstrating the link between better data, better care. And we have two presenters for this particular presentation, Adeline Yerkes and Joanne Ware. They have been program consultants to the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors for 10 years, partnering with CDC's Division of Diabetes Translation and the Division of Reproductive Health. They also work in state chronic disease, MCH, and PRAMS program directors. I'm sorry, maybe I'm too close here. And they also work with the Association of Maternal and Child Health Program to promote early prevention of type 2 diabetes and other chronic diseases through collaboration and integration of public health services and programs. Adeline was formerly the chronic disease director of Oklahoma Department of Health, and Joan was the director of cardiovascular program for the Utah Department of Health. Both have MPH degrees, a long-term interest in women's health, and have been active in chronic disease prevention and health promotion for over 30 years. Adeline will begin the presentation.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being here. Joan and I wish to acknowledge some of the partners that helped make this presentation successful. Dr. Michelle Owens, who is our project officer with the Division of Diabetes Translation at CDC. Lori Bosch, who is an epidemiologist with the Utah Department of Health. Brenda Walls, who is also with the Utah Department of Health. Mary Emmett, who is the research director at the Charleston Area Medical Center. And Dr. Elizabeth Conroy, who's a CDC assignee to the Ohio Department of Health. And she's with the Maternal Child Health Division in Ohio. We're going to talk a little bit about diabetes, then gestational diabetes, and then share with you phase one and phase two of our gestational diabetes project. And we're interested in diabetes because of its growth and the increased prevalence. From a CDC survey that was done in 2014, we know that now diabetes affects 2 out of every 5 Americans, and that for women, the average 20-year-old 30 years ago had about a 20% risk of, or 25% risk of getting diabetes, and now it's up to 40%. And as long as the prevalence is rising, so have the costs. In 2012, some $245 billion was spent on diabetes overall. That's all types of diabetes, type 1, type 2, their variations, plus the gestational diabetes. And gestational diabetes cost about $636 million in 1 year. So why are she and I interested as chronic disease people in pregnancy? Well, it's a real window to the past as well as to the future. And if a woman has type 2 diabetes, hypertension, or heart disease, or any of these chronic diseases when she becomes pregnant, then the pregnancy may exacerbate it. We also know what kind of complications we may have to be interested in if she has not managed those chronic diseases well before. But if she doesn't have those chronic diseases and then has a complication during her pregnancy, it's a window into the future. It's also a window that we can look at the genetic predisposition both for her and her offspring. Gestational diabetes is glucose intolerance, and it's only seen in pregnancy. It is not something that is pre-existing before pregnancy, and it's not existing after pregnancy. And one of the major problems that we have in gestational diabetes is the actual identification, because many women come in and are diagnosed with gestational diabetes and they actually have pre-existing type 2 diabetes. So it's important that we do a differential diagnosis on the very first prenatal visit to rule out type 2 versus gestational diabetes. Now, when it comes time for management, we treat both the same during the pregnancy, but it's very important to know the difference when it comes time to the postpartum area. And one of our other issues with gestational diabetes is that for many years, the provider and the patient both believe it disappears and never to be seen again. And we know that's not true because it sets up the woman to have prediabetes and then on generally for type 2 diabetes. So why the interest now versus a few years ago? Well, 20 years ago, the prevalence rate was about 1%. Today, it's anywhere from 7 to 14%, and it will be increasing to close to 20% in the next few years. And why the big variation? Well, we have five different protocols for screening and diagnosis of gestational diabetes. So, depending on what you use for differential diagnosis, is the prevalence rate. Affects about 240,000 pregnancies a year, and women who have gestational diabetes are seven times more likely to develop type 2 diabetes in the future. About 30% of women, once they have delivered, will continue to have type 2 diabetes following that pregnancy, or they may even have type 1 diabetes, only it's a very small amount. But within the next 5 to 15 years, something like 60% of them will have type 2 diabetes, and overall about 70% of them will have type 2 diabetes in the future. Women who have both gestational diabetes and preeclampsia are 18 times more at risk to have early heart disease, hypertension, and many of them have heart attacks. Now we know that this sets up the offspring also. So not only is the woman seven times more at risk for developing type 2 diabetes and heart disease, so is their offspring. And so it's very important that we follow through, because with the diabetes prevention trials that were held, we know that early intervention can delay, if not prevent, type 2 diabetes. So we need long-term follow-up, and that's why it's important to know the difference between type 1 or type 2 and gestational diabetes. So this led to us forming a collaboration with the Division of Diabetes in 2008, and we were funded from the Division of Diabetes Translation, as well as Reproductive Health, and then also the Office on Women's Health, to do a data validation study. Five states were selected, and all states used the same type of protocol for cross-comparison birth certificates, PRAMs, and hospital discharge data. If the data showed, all of them showed that there was gestational diabetes, we did not go on further. We considered that as prevalence. But if there was any kind of discord, then we went to the medical record to determine whether the woman had GDM or not. All of the states used the same type of abstracting tool so that we had some validation. This was pilot tested before we started. So what did we learn from the pilot? Well, that documentation and diagnosis is lacking in prenatal records, hospital records, and discharge data. About 40% of the records lacked some type of documentation, either through diagnostic testing or through even screening, whether the woman screened or not. We don't know because of the documentation. Women may not be tested appropriately. They may have had an abnormal screen and then no further testing for differential diagnosis of GDM or not. And then they may, if they've had an elevated screening level, they may not have received the appropriate follow-up and management needed for diabetes during the pregnancy. We know that many of them do not understand the risk because we validated that through some surveys later on. And women may not receive the appropriate postpartum care, and women may have been misclassified because they did not have initial screening at the time of the first prenatal visit. The literature also says a couple of other things. We know that 50% of women get a postpartum visit. And then of that group, only 50% get the glucose screen during the postpartum visit, and it's important that they receive that glucose screen. The link between the OBGYN, who may have delivered that woman, or the healthcare provider, and their primary care provider is often missing, so that the primary provider does not understand what's happening following the pregnancy, or the OBGYN may not know what's happening when the woman comes in to deliver. Few women with a history of GDM receive the interventions for management and type 2 diabetes prevention later on. And we know that in training, OBs are not trained to educate women about the future risk, and we know that the primary care physician isn't trained to ask about the risk, so we have an imbalance there. The focus is all on a healthy baby and a healthy pregnancy, not the woman and her overall comprehensive care. So then in 2009, we were further funded to look at some interventions to address this. So hence the GDM Collaborative Better Care, or Better Data, Better Care. We had five specific goals that we were to follow. First was to form some kind of collaborative relationship. Second was, if they did not already have some data around surveillance of GDM, that they do that. And if they did have it done, then to improve on that data, being the second and third, to develop interventions to improve care. And then a long-term goal was to prevent or delay type 2 through postpartum glucose screening, follow-up, and lifestyle coaches. From 2009 through 2012, we enrolled 9 states and 4 tribal organizations. And at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Joan to share with you the phase 2 interventions and what we learned. Joan?
We'll play go first.
Yeah.
Okay, what do I press?
Oh, I'm sorry. This button right here.
I'm technologically challenged.
Page down.
Okay, all right. Now for the results. In surveillance, we've made some inroads, not as many as we need to. CDC was vacillating about changing their PRAMS question, and our validation study pushed them over the edge. So in 2009, PRAMS asks about healthcare providers diagnosing gestational diabetes compared to asking if the mom had an elevated blood sugar. You'll agree that is more specific. Working with CSTE and CDC, we were able to get GDM as a chronic disease indicator, newly published, I believe, last summer, for both MCH and diabetes. And this will help the states focus on GDM and maybe put it on their radar screen. We are finally getting almost all our states to use the 2003 birth certificate data, although there are still about 7, and our last project didn't start using it until 2014. So it's very hard to combine state data. None of our states was collecting data on GDM, and now they all have inventoried their data sets to see what they have, and they've all published a prevalence report, although we're not sure exactly what that means. But you have to use what you've got. And I want to tell you about Utah's birth certificate project. They added the new PRAMS question to the maternal worksheet that's used to put data on the birth certificate. Then they looked at birth certificates matching the mom's worksheet if she said she had GDM. It turned out that 48% of the women with documented GDM on the medical record did not have it on their birth certificate. So then they went back and thought, why is this? So they assessed the causes. They found out that it could be just a simple data entry error. The data entry just didn't click on GDM. So they figured out a drop-down box. Down there where it starts, gestational diabetes during this pregnancy from the worksheet, yes, Is it on their medical record? Yes, no. And where in the medical record? And if any of those boxes are not filled out, you can't advance the screen. This forces the data entry clerk to do it right. And they provided training and still ongoing training for all the data entry staff. They have been able to decrease missing GDM data on the birth certificate by 85%. You know, that's pretty good. They assessed anything that moved, providers, health educators, or certified diabetes educators, WIC clients, focus groups on postpartum women and high-risk groups. The Chickasaws and Boston University did a focus group with the Native American women postpartum to look at the tribal beliefs, facilitators, barriers, all the problems, to get information to find out what are the problems in care and where do we start. The most amazing thing, one-third of all these providers did not know the size of the risk for type 2 diabetes with women with GDM. It wasn't on their radar screen. No wonder they're not going back for tests. The docs are not paying, the providers are not paying attention. In some states, only 19% of the providers reported actually prescribing or ordering a glucose test postpartum. One of the greatest problems the states reported was direct access to data and access to adequate EPI staff, meaning that many states don't have EPI people to support them, or they have no access to them. That was the number one complaint from all of our projects. All of our states but one were PRAM states, but only two were allowed to add any questions to the core of the PRAMs, and only two states had access to Medicaid data, which in some cases is the only source for postpartum data. We've got two out of 13 projects. Scarce data for ethnicity and races. Data are not really accessible to providers and the public. And all you epidemiologists are wonderful people. But sometimes some epidemiologists, not you guys, but others, hold on dearly to their data and they do not share it with anybody. Some of our states had to go crawling on their knees pleading for data to find out so that they could learn how to use it. The hardest data we had to find was data on postpartum testing and postpartum visits. The WIC population, a very high-risk population for GDM, needs a lot more resources in education and in follow-up. Our certified diabetes educators are wonderful, but their services are not available to the high-risk populations who need them. Knowing all of this and seeing all the problems, we needed to develop interventions. We did so many educational projects, from video conferences to summits to webinars to CEUs for providers, anything to get the word out, this is how it's done. West Virginia published a toolkit to improve clinical services from prenatal to postpartum, and they found that by putting a resident in charge of the project, that he actually watched what was going on and he was held accountable. So we found out that by telling women early about the problems with GDM, you could increase all of these missing data sets, all of this missing knowledge, significantly, just starting at the beginning. And it made changes in all their documented goals, and especially increasing postpartum visits and orders for tests. We had a plethora of culturally and literacy appropriate patient educational materials. We're showing you Alaska's because we just love the way it feels. But these are our patient education. We had text for babies, media, radio, TV, all kinds, anything you could think of to get the words out to our moms based on some of the focus groups that were done. Our tribes added to their diabetes registry a place for GDM. Dropped down clinical guidelines and decision trees for docs to remind them on care for GDM. One of the most successful was, again, Utah, but three other states did it too, mailing out packets to our women who had delivered and had GDM. Within 2 weeks of a live delivery, women received this packet reminding them to have a checkup and a glucose test, had a refrigerator magnet to remind them about lifestyle changes they could make, and a list of questions to ask their doc. The MCH programs added GDM to their home visiting projects. South North Carolina developed a team approach similar to West Virginia, and they cut the time down for glucose control from 7 weeks to 3.5 and increased positive lifestyle changes. We learned that the electronic medical records need to have a GDM template. And if you do the kinds of things that we're demonstrating with the mail-out packet, for instance, that you can increase postpartum visits by 30 to 35%. And this was not an expensive project. Each state was only funded between $3,000 and $10,000. But they were able to leverage. There's so much interest because this is a new thing, a new disease. They were able to leverage to almost $5 for every federal dollar they had, and tribes doubled their resources. So we hope that this shows you, A, there's still a need to, for more and better data for our surveillance. But if you can enhance the quality of the data, the accessibility of the data, and the application, you can change clinical practices, you can change knowledge bases, and you can improve GDM care. And what I'm pleading with all of you epidemiologists out there is to reach out to your program people. Help us learn how to use the data we have, share it with us, teach us how to apply it, and please try to be invited in on the beginning of a project so that program people know what to collect, why they're collecting it, and they don't spin their wheels collecting data they don't need. You're really vital. All of our projects that were the most successful were the ones that had the strongest epi support. Please go make friends with all of your program people. Thank you.